Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 4th, 2018. President Kiir offers an olive branch to opposition groups.
In 1983, when we had differences with the Nyanyatu elements, after a bloody confrontation, we decided to enter into dialogue, which led to a peaceful integration of the Nyanyatu forces into the SPLM-SPLA.
And what are some of the challenges facing a demobilized child soldier?
If education is not there for them, it's actually hard for them to get money for food and housing and basic needs, and also to get support from the broader family. And
we'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's ruling party, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, is holding a two-day meeting aimed at reunifying the fractured party. Addressing a party delegates yesterday, President Kiir called on party officials to compromise, reunify the party, and restore peace. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
This is the fourth meeting of the SPLM's legislative body, the National Liberation Council, since the party was formed in 1983. The theme for this week's meeting is Together for Peace, Reconciliation and Unity. Speaking to hundreds of party delegates, President Salva Kiir reminded members that a similar National Liberation Council meeting in December 2013 sparked the current conflict, which resulted into the disintegration of the party. Mr. Kiir says party officials should put more efforts in uniting the party. He says the unity of SPLM could restore peace and stability across South Sudan. The president appealed to former party officials like the SPLM former detainees and other officials who have formed opposition groups outside South Sudan to return to the country and join him.
We must continue to embrace the spirit of compromise because the SPLM has a long history of handling internal differences. We must be reminded of our founding history. In 1983, when we had differences with the Nyanyatu elements, after a bloody confrontation, we decided to enter into dialogue, which led to a peaceful integration of the Nyanyatu forces into the SPLM-SPLA.
Mr. Kiir's latest offer of an olive branch comes after he publicly said 2 weeks ago that, quote, he regretted for pardoning party officials he accused of attempting to take power by force.
I thought I was dealing with my brothers. After arresting them, I kept them safe, and then I was put under pressure to release them and hand them over to a grantor, somebody who guaranteed that these people are not going to talk, not going to be engaged in politics. Okay, I released them. I thought people were looking for peace. When I released them in the evening on the national television, I saw them received in the red carpet by that country, and they started talking. So this is where I regret having spared their lives.
The leader of the former detainees, Pagan Amom, SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar, and other officials did not attend the ongoing National Liberation Council meeting. John Luke Jok represented the SPLM former detainees at the opening session of the ruling party meeting yesterday. Luke says his group welcomes the efforts to unite the party, but he says ending the conflict and addressing the economic challenges facing South Sudan should be the program for the country's leaders. He says in order to achieve genuine peace across South Sudan, the government should consult and work with all the political parties.
The central objective in the political engagement and dialogue should be to restore to resolve issues surrounding the revitalization of the ARCUS under the IGAD mediation in the interest of peace and stability of the country. It is important for SPLM leaders to acknowledge that Only a comprehensive peace can unite and save our country.
The ongoing SPLM meeting is expected to endorse documents including the Arusha Reunification Agreement signed in 2015 by the various factions, the SPLM in government, the SPLM in opposition, and the SPLM former detainees. Guarantors to the Arusha Reunification Agreement includes the presidents of South Africa, Tanzania, Rwanda, and Egypt. We are invited to the meeting but did not attend. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni was the only foreign head of state who attended yesterday's meeting. Speaking at the event, the Ugandan leader criticized regional bloc IGAD for its power-sharing proposals, which he called unrealistic. He also criticized the proposal by the South Sudan Oppositional Alliance that both Mr. Kiir and Machar should be excluded in any future government in South Sudan. Mr. Museveni told the South Sudanese leaders to reform the South Sudan army by recruiting people from all parts of the country. The Ugandan leader says South Sudanese leaders should stop using violence as a means for resolving their differences.
What we should do is to bring back the SPLM first and then bring the others also. I talk of the SPLM because there was a historical convergence at some point, which was good, which is a good starting point. Now, once you have resolved that issue of we need a strong party, then you must go to the next issue of ideology.
Senior SPLM-IO leader met with Museveni in Kampala on Wednesday. It is not clear what the Ugandan leader told Machar's senior party members. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Aid agencies have facilitated the release of hundreds of child soldiers from armed groups in South Sudan. That process brought another task of reintegrating the children into their societies. SIN Bureau reports from Washington that complex task begins in the classroom.
An Oslo-based researcher says education plays a significant role in the reintegration process of child soldiers. Maretha Skoro interviewed 20 South Sudanese child soldiers during her work. She says learning new skills is important for the demobilization of children.
If education is not there for them, it's actually hard for them to get money for food and housing and basic needs, and also to get support from the broader family, and also in addition, when they are demobilized, the impacts of war are also an obstacle to integration, because often they are traumatized and stigmatized, which makes it even harder.
Skoro says lack of food, housing, and security encourages some children to join armed groups, seeking protection and other incentives. She says many children are forced into armed conflict, and some face stigma after escaping from conflict zones. Some 300 child soldiers were released by armed groups in Yambio in February. The UN's children's agency, UNICEF, is working to free hundreds more. Virginia Gamba is the UN Secretary General's Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict Prevention. Gamba says she supports local public awareness campaigns that help people, including soldiers in the bush, understand that recruiting child soldiers is wrong and unlawful.
And when they understand that, the chances of both armed groups wanting to release children and stop recruiting children is much bigger. So one thing that could be done is increase the prevention and public awareness campaigns so that they don't focus only on recruitment. I would like that such a campaign would focus on the 6 violations against children in armed conflict: abduction, attacks on schools and hospitals, killing and maiming, sexual violence against children, denial of humanitarian access for children.
Last year, UNICEF reported 293 attacks on schools that affected over 90,000 children. UNICEF estimates over 2,300 children have been killed or maimed, and about 19,000 have been recruited or associated with armed groups. UNICEF says the experience of war takes a heavy toll on a child's mental health. UNICEF estimates some 900,000 South Sudanese children suffer from psychosocial distress. Skoro says addressing trauma should be the first step to reintegration.
If an organization can do it, that's good. if the education system can cater for it, it's even better. Although I think we cannot really demand too much from the teachers in the time of war, where they already struggle just to actually go to work and do their job with very limited salary.
And while there is a desire to help former child soldiers catch up to months or years of missed classes, Skoros warns against accelerated learning programs where years of schooling is compressed. For example, 8 years of primary school is compressed to 4 years.
The research shows that often the youth have learning difficulties due to their war experiences. So an accelerated path for learning is not the best way to do it. So I think they should be integrated into the regular classrooms with all other regular students. And the teachers should definitely know about their former identities as child soldiers and possibly get training from UNICEF or other, like the Ministry of Education or other NGOs or partner organizations.
While research shows that education is the best option for reintegrating child soldiers, access continues to be a burden. In South Sudan, UNICEF says about 2 million school-aged children, or 72% of children, are not in school. That is the highest proportion in the world. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
The head of a South Sudan youth group has been in Washington to talk about the next phase of the South Sudan peace talks in Addis Ababa. Malwal Bolkir says he came to Washington to convince the U.S. to put more pressure on the warring parties and IGAD to include more young people in the peace process.
I have to gain first to appreciate the work that they have done and as U.S. policymakers in terms of, you know, putting more efforts to the peace process, ongoing peace process in South Sudan. So I would be able to discuss with them about the ongoing peace process, the High Level Revitalization Forum, and in order for them to put more pressure to punish the peace spoilers and to work so hard for the inclusion of young South Sudanese who are the both present and the future leaders of South Sudan.
Are youth activists in South Sudan adequately represented at the High Level Forum?
We have only one South Sudanese representative to the High Level Revitalization Forum, but we feel that one person is not enough. Though she's really amazing, she represents all the South Sudanese.
Who is that person?
She's called Koit Emily. She also sits as a youth representative to the JAMEC. We have been, you know, so supportive to her. We've been having a lot of youth strategies meeting to give our opinions to her, and she's always been working with us.
What are some of those needs and grievances, I guess, of the youth groups around South Sudan? What are the things that you want to see addressed at the forum and signed in any kind of agreement that comes out of there in Addis Ababa?
First and foremost, the young people in South Sudan, the youth in South Sudan, they are often being left out in decisions that are made to determine the future of South Sudan. So there's a need to include them in governance. Like we had recently a youth meeting, we call it the National Youth Conference meeting at Entebbe, where we come together as the South Sudanese youth leaders from the civil society, from, you know, youth representing different political parties and from the government, from the TIGONU, the Transitional Government National Unity.
And out of that conference, did you come up with specific recommendations for the leaders at the forum, for IGAD?
Yes, we came up with the recommendations, and one of the recommendations is that they put a quota that there's need for 35% representation of the South Sudanese youth in governance, which is going to be discussed in Addis. And we also call for inclusion of more young people in the process, as well as making sure that we also demand, you know, for the immediate release of the prisoners of war, that and all the political detainees that have not yet been released.
In America, we talk about young people as being like in their lower 20s. You're in your 20s. You're only 25, I understand, right? But
yeah.
I know that in South Sudan, it's a little different. When you talk about the youth, that means people that are also in their 30s, right? So these people have had some experience, and therefore, that, you know, they are legitimate people that could run certain government institutions, right?
When I talk about that, it's true. The youth are supposed to be, you know, they are supposed to be the one that are leading the country at various levels. But the reason why we do this is that most of the time, you know, we have been most often left out in all those decisions that are made for our own country. And the reason why we put that quota is something that other young people that are not able to push, you know, for their own representation from various constituencies that they come from will use, you know, that quotas to demand for their own representation in the governance. So the youth definition in South Sudan is not very clear because we don't even have the youth policy. And this is something that we have laid out because we need to come up with the national youth agenda. And, you know, we go up to 45 as youth, but we work mostly, we wanted to work with
age
the African
45, you mean?
45 now. That, you know, sometimes they are included as young people. And part of our recommendations is because there are a lot of institutional barriers that so much, you know, constraint or hindrance to the presentation of young people, because there are certain positions that if you have not yet reached 40 years old, you can't contest for the position.
The majority population of South Sudan is mostly in that category. They are young. So it seems in South Sudan that the cronyism is such a big problem. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, when we talk about experience, sometimes it's a marginalizing word, for example, I'm sorry to say that, because the youth in South Sudan, they have a lot of potentials. They are really some of them are really very educated, and they have the needed requirements. And they have the potentials and capacities that even some of the old folks don't have in South Sudan. And that's why they are dragging the country to where they are. So we wanted to make sure that there's a more representation from young people who have those capacities so that they lead the country, because they know that they can create a difference today to build a better tomorrow.
That's Malwal Bolkir, Executive Director of the African Youth Action Network, a local non-governmental organization based in Kampala. He was speaking to Carol Van Dam in Washington. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the challenges facing the media in Nigeria. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite childhood song?
I love gospel music, especially choral singing.
Baby Jesus, where are you? Where are you? Sleeping in your manger, sleeping in your manger. Yeah, I am.
The song I usually dance was this song from Extra Musica, Trop C'est Trop. Trop, 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 trop c'est trop. Yeah, I stage that like everywhere.
We used to sing when it is almost time to go home. We used to sing Mwalimu Kwaheri, Mwalimu Kwaheri, you know.
Papa is a kind of food, yellow like Fanta, sweet like sugar. Everybody like Papa. Papa!
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The public has a role to protect press freedom, democracy, free speech, and good governance. Governments and businesses around the world often try to obstruct journalists from uncovering corruption and wrongdoing. From Abuja, Nigeria reporter Gift Agriga looks at some of the issues faced by the media in her country.
This year's World Press Freedom Day theme focuses on using the press, the justice system, and rule of law to keep power in check. Desmond Otoen is the founder of the Center Against Brutality for the Protection of Journalists in Africa. He says the Nigerian media largely has done a good job exposing government corruption. He gave the example of former Inspector General of Police, Tafa Balogu, who was arrested, tried, and jailed for stealing over $100 million of government funds France several years ago.
It was the media that exposed the cases of corruption around him, for which he was eventually relieved of his position as the IG. I think the media has actually done a whole lot.
Otonwe said the press should do more investigative reporting, though at this point it's restricted by a lack of funding from private media houses and from donors. He says the ability of the press to uncover mismanagement and to maintain public support depends on sharpening journalistic skills with regular training.
So far, we've had a very vibrant media as it is. At the moment, we're actually trying to ensure that they're also as professional as it could be. With the proliferation of so many blogs and sites being opened on a daily basis, the issue of hate speech, the issue of fake news are also very prevalent. If you do your job properly and you have good knowledge of what you are doing, you possibly may not be exposed to all of them.
Media experts also urge a review of laws and regulations that may impede the work of journalists. The press watchdog Reporters Without Borders ranks Nigeria as 119th out of 180 countries in its latest World Press Freedom Index. In comparison, Ghana, Namibia, and South Africa sit in the top 30. The group says, although Nigeria enjoys over 100 independent media outlets, reporters face powerful regional governors and prosecutors who often try to suppress the release of unflattering information. It also says Nigeria reporters are often accused by authorities of undermining troop morale when they report on the difficulties faced by security forces fighting terrorism. Emmanuel Obeche is a representative of the West African Journalists Association in Nigeria. He says even legal protections may not help journalists if they are not implemented. He says both state and non-state actors across West Africa have suppressed the work of journalists.
We have crooked politicians that consistently and continually work against how journalists should practice. Let me give you an instance in Nigeria. Despite the fact that the country has a Freedom of Information Act, it is unthinkable for you to ask for information concerning government expenditure, especially from the oil sector.
Obeche also recommends that legislators and media houses improve conditions of reporters working in dangerous situations by providing, for example, better salaries and insurance. The Nigeria Union of Journalists will mark World Press Freedom Day this week with awards to those who have withstood harassment and physical threats in the line of duty. Also being honored will be those who waged a brave fight in defense of press freedom, but who lost their lives while doing so. For VOA, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja.
From Abuja, we move to northern Uganda. South Sudanese refugees who fled to Democratic Republic of Congo are crossing into Uganda. The refugees say they are looking for better education opportunities for their children. As Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Arua, some of the refugees claim tough living conditions at camps in DRC forced them to migrate to Uganda.
A source of the UNHCR who is not authorized to speak to the media says a majority of the 300 South Sudanese refugees who continue to arrive in Uganda each day are crossing over from the DRC, and that more families are expected to continue arriving in Uganda. Emmanuel Agele is one of the South Sudanese refugees who came by land from DRC and has settled at the Rhino Refugee Settlement in Arua District. Agele says he spent about a year and a half at the Biringi refugee camp in the DRC, where he was a community leader. He says at one time there were around 5,200 South Sudanese refugees at the camp. He claims most of the refugees have abandoned Biringi and have crossed into Uganda.
In DRC, there are no distribution for us food. What's there is money. The money they are distributing is $13. So that money, everything is there. Shop, flour, even if you want sugar, want take tea, these are all the money. So we see the challenges a lot.
Mambo Alex fled his village in Morobo County of Yei River State in January 2017 and settled at the Biringi camp. He says the search for better education opportunities for children has forced families to cross into Uganda.
So even in Biringi, there is no primary school which has been constructed within the camp. The primary school is within the citizens. And then our children move like 5 to 4 kilometers for school. That's why we have seen that situation is not good for us.
Refugees are expected to respect the UN's concept of first country of asylum as defined in Article 26 of the Asylum Procedures Directives, or APD, which restricts refugees from seeking asylum in multiple countries. Selina Konga spent about a year at the Biringi camp. She claims all of her 4 children stayed at home without education. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, Konga says that will change now that she made it to Omugo in the Rhino settlement.
It's a challenge for those who have children. What is the point of staying if the children are out of school? That is a problem, and that is the main reason why people are leaving. I don't care if I stay hungry as long as my children are getting an education.
Agele, Alex, and Konga say, despite the dangers they face while crossing into Uganda, they are glad they left DRC. They say conditions are much better in Uganda, regardless of some of the challenges refugees also face.
Medication is good. You have free transports like ambulance. If you are sick, you will be taken where else. And education is good. Our children now enjoying English, and we have a freedom of movement. And then we have been distributed this ID for refugees. That is why I say here is fair than we stay in Biringi.
They say majority of South Sudanese refugees in DRC want to come to Uganda because they believe conditions are still much better in Uganda, which is already hosting more than 1 million South Sudanese refugees. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Arua, Uganda.
That report by Simon Peter Apiku in Arua brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now take you back to the Democratic Republic of Congo with the song Zonga by Sisqo.
Kanga sheri na loketo Mama na bana kanga peri na nzoto Mais je ferai tout pour qu'il redevienne mienne. Écoute mon pardon, Bossana, nos problèmes. Être loin de toi, c'est ma plus grosse peine. Oublie le passé, je ne te ferai plus de peine. Zonga, Zonga, Zonga. Ça fait déjà quelques années qu'on n'est plus ensemble. La flamme de notre amour s'est réduite en cendres. L'ange de l'amour pour nous ne veut plus descendre. T'es parti sans avoir même cherché à comprendre. As-tu quelque chose à te reprocher? Est-ce que j'ai tout gâché? On s'était promis de jamais se lâcher. Tous nos souvenirs se sont effacés. Oui, j'avoue, depuis ton départ, tout était flou. C'était ma béquille sans, je tiens plus debout. Le sucre de notre amour n'avait plus de goût. Coup sur coup, qui ne s'avère plus rien du tout. J'y vois plus rien, là je suis dans un trou. Prisonnier d'amour sans avoir d'écrou. Mais je ferai tout pour qu'il redevienne mienne. Écoute mon pardon, Bossana, nos problèmes. Être loin de toi, c'est ma plus grosse peine. Oublie le passé, je ne te ferai plus de peine. Zonga, Zonga, Zonga. C'est déjà quelques mois qu'on se rejette la faute. Toi c'est toi, toi c'est moi, cet avenir c'est le nôtre. Avance sans écouter ce qui se dit à côté. Pas une autre, c'est toi ma chérie que je vais doter. As-tu quelque chose à m'annoncer? Est-ce que tu m'as remplacé? Je me suis promis de toujours t'aimer. J'ai perdu ton cœur, je vais le regagner. Oui j'avoue, depuis ton départ tout était flou. C'était ma béquille sans, je tiens plus debout. Le sucre de notre amour n'avait plus de goût. Coup sur coup, qui ne s'avère plus rien du tout. J'y vois plus rien, là je suis dans un trou. Prisonnier d'amour sans avoir d'écrou. Mais je ferai tout pour qu'il redevienne mienne. Écoute mon pardon, Bossana, nos problèmes. Être loin de toi, c'est ma plus grosse peine. Oublie le passé, je ne te ferai plus de peine.
We have been listening to Sisqo with the song Zonga, which means return back. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We love to hear what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.